on his new role at Marietta College. Bill, it's been great working with you. And I also want to thank Regent Andringer for her service over the last year. And then congratulations to Regent Richards. All of us at Iowa State really look forward to working with you. And thanks for doing this. So as we look at the slide here, Iowa State is coming off another record year of enrollment. I think we all know that. Our undergraduate commencement ceremony kicked off an exciting new tradition as a result of this growth. Due to the number of graduates participating, we decided in relatively short notice to move the ceremony from Hilton Coliseum to Jack Trice Stadium. And I'll say in 10 days, the commencement team and the athletics department pulled off this entire transition into a wonderful ceremony. We had all the traditional pomp and circumstance, as well as a few new things like using the Cyclone Tunnel for our processional. The kids and the families really, really like this. The spring graduating class totaled more than 4,400 students. It's a new record, and over 2,400 participated in graduation. And it went really, really well. Exciting ceremony. I do want to say, though, that this high enrollment, the new commencement ceremony, the graduation numbers really, really are exciting. But it's a lot of what's driving this request we had for an increase in tuition. We only got 27% of what we needed from the state. We've been very thoughtful, very careful in formulating a modest proposal to the regents. I've said for 4.5 years that access and affordability without quality is not a good value for our students. And if you look at all those people in the stands, that's a lot of students, and it takes resources to give the quality education we want to give at Iowa State. So we appreciate your support in that issue. While we're at commencement, we were honored. First time we had a sitting cabinet secretary do our commencement address. Dr. Ernest Moniz was our commencement speaker. Dr. Moniz was a former MIT professor, now serves as U.S. Secretary of Energy, and gave an outstanding address to the students on their role in addressing global challenges through innovation. Very well received. But while he was on campus, he also helped dedicate Ames Laboratories' new sensitive instrument facility. This is Ames Laboratories' first new research facility in 50 years. It houses microscopy equipment that enables researchers to study material at the atomic level. It's a really fascinating new facility. And it was very nice for all of us to hear Dr. Moniz's remarks on the robust, fully integrated partnership between the Department of Energy and the Ames Lab. And he emphasized the critical role our research has played in the nation over the years. That's Dr. Moniz there, and you can see him on the tour in the sensitive instrument facility. Our student athletes are performing very well in the classroom. This is something that's a huge issue for us. There have been many issues with athletics around the country. We're proud of the fact that for the first time ever, our student athletes climbed to a 3.0 mark collectively across the entire campus. And much of the credit goes this year to our football student athletes, who hit a real high for academic achievement. to put this in perspective, 219 of our student athletes were named scholar athletes, meaning they had a 3.0 or higher. 109 of them made the dean's list with a 3.5, and then 32 Cyclone athletes had a perfect 4.0. So this is the kind of program we want to run, and I thought it'd be of real interest to the regents. Exciting recognition to share. Sarah Riala, who is dean of the College of Engineering, has been named National Engineer of the Year by the American Association of Engineering Societies. This is an AAU-recognized award, extremely prestigious, and it recognizes Dr. Riala's inspirational leadership, innovations in engineering education, assessment, and her tireless efforts to promote diversity in the engineering field. And it's a field where we've made great strides under her leadership. Our College of Engineering is now the eighth largest in the country with 9,300 students, 12 majors, 5 minors, and consistently ranks in one of the top 25 engineering programs at public universities. Another exciting award, the Iowa State Daily, John McCarroll's back there, probably proud today, has earned top honors from the Society of Professional Journalists. The newspaper earned the best all-around student newspaper in the country. That is a tremendous thing for our students. The paper was evaluated based on issues submitted in 2015. Second place went to the University of Mississippi's paper, and third place went to the Daily Bruin from UCLA. This is a staff, mainly students, in the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication, which is recognized as one of the best journalism programs in the country. And then this is translating to experiential learning. And you can see this paper has really high standards and is achieved at a high level. In the photo there on the lower right, this is the Daily's new office space in the Kingland Building in Campus Town. They're excited about their new space. It's a state-of-the-art type newsroom and well-deserved, and you can see they're prospering in that space. Another update, the Iowa State University Cyclone Football Varsity Marching Band just spent last week in France for the annual D-Day commemoration. The marching band received a personal invitation from the United States government to perform at the commemoration of World War II's D-Day invasion. We hold this event every year in France to honor the World War II veterans. Over 40,000 people attend. It was a great honor for the band, which is under the director of Stephen Smith. Switching gears, you've heard me mention over the years how important safety is at the university. It remains a top priority for me as president. So I want to talk about three initiatives briefly that hopefully will enhance our campus safety efforts. First, the Iowa State Police Department is piloting a new body camera policy. We're on the front edge of this for university police departments. The policy will require all uniformed officers to wear body cameras while on duty, to activate the cameras during any law enforcement action. Now, we're in the testing phase. This is a pilot project, but we'll start with all officers wearing cameras this year. Find another tool for us to improve transparency on campus. Second, we're working to make it easier for our folks to use our safety escort service. We've issued an RFP, and we're going to develop a smartphone app similar to like an Uber app where our students and staff and visitors can request a ride on their smartphones. The safety escort requests have more than tripled over the last 10 years. We had over 6,000 students and staff requesting safety escorts at night on campus, and this new app will give them greater accuracy in terms of their pickup locations, how far away their escort is, when they'll arrive, these kinds of things. The app is necessary in today's society. We're really excited about this. We're actually adding another vehicle to the fleet right now. Third initiative in this area is we've now have three ISU police officers serving as multicultural liaison officers. They're engaging in outreach efforts with multicultural and underrepresented students, faculty, and staff. Their office officers pictured here are working very closely with our Office of Multicultural Student Affairs and have met with numerous groups and organizations to establish productive, positive relationships. Before the end of the spring semester, these officers held a meet and greet at the Multicultural Center and the Student Union. Due to the very positive response, we're going to expand this program in the future. This has been very, very well received by the students especially. Next, I have some important personnel announcements. We've filled three top leadership positions at the university. It's unusual to transition three people at this level at once. First, Catherine Gregory, and Kate is here. Kate, will you stand up for a minute so people can see who you are? Thanks, Kate. She has been selected to serve as the Senior Vice President for University Services. She's a recently retired Rear Admiral and currently serves on the Board of Directors of the U.S. Department of Energy's Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory in Batavia, Illinois. Previously, she was Chief of Civil Engineers and Commander of the Naval Facilities Engineering Command in Washington, D.C. She has a bachelor's degree in General Engineering from the U.S. Naval Academy, a master's in Systems Management from USC, and a master's in Construction Management from George Washington University. As Senior Vice President, she will oversee facilities planning, management, business services, environmental health and safety, public safety, and units such as Ryman Gardens, University Museums, and the Radio Group. And you may recall that this job was created as a result of my decision to split the office of business and finance that Warren Madden had been running when he retired. We've also filled the position of University Counsel. Michael Norton is currently a partner in the Hirsch Blackwell Law Firm in Kansas City. He serves as the leader in the firm's higher education practice, has extensive experience in Title IX compliance, employment law, data protection, policy development, as well as training. He's got a bachelor's degree from the University of Utah and got his law degree locally here at Drake University. And third, Laura Dunjolly will assume the role of dean and Dean's Chair in the College of Human Sciences. She's currently a professor of textiles, merchandising, and interiors at the University of Georgia. She also served 3 years as Dean and Associate Director of Cooperative Extension in Georgia. She has extensive experience in teaching, research, extension, and outreach. We're excited to bring them all on board, and I want to note, Kate's replacing someone with 50 years of service, Michael replacing someone with over 20 years of service, and Laura replacing someone with over 40 years of service. So it's unusual for these positions to move forward like this on campus. And then third, we're looking forward to our big grand opening later today. I know many will be joining us at our new Economic Development Core facility. I want to make sure in this forum that I express gratitude for the region's enthusiastic support for this project and also to the state for its financial resources to make this a reality. This was an unusual project done in an unusual way. I also want to acknowledge the city's collaborative efforts on this project. The core facility is now the cornerstone of Iowa State Research Park's major expansion. It's also a gateway to the cultivation corridor, and it will serve as a one-stop shop for all of Iowa State's economic development activities. I also want to recognize, not only were we pleased to have the board with us today, but Lieutenant Governor will be joining us also. So we're excited to have you there later today. If there's any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Any questions or comments for Steve? No, thank you.
Thank you.
President Harrell.
Good. Thank you very much. It's good to be here. For over 4,900 of our students recently became part of our strong and vibrant alumni base, which now numbers over 270,000 students. These amazing students are now off on their lifelong journey of learning, and I'm very proud that we at the University of Iowa helped them get started on that voyage. I want to spend the rest of my time sort of focusing on the topic of the day, why we need increased resources and what we'll do with them. And this is probably a good place to start. In order to achieve and to deliver on our promise that we make to our students about receiving a world-class education, we must have world-class faculty to deliver it. Frederick here, Frederick Doman, is one of those faculty members. Frederick is on our Carver College of Medicine. He was recently honored for his work by the Society of Experimental Biology and Medicine. And he's a really good example, because while Professor Doman was educated at the University of Wisconsin, and he did his postdoc at the University of Arizona's Cancer Center, which are both peer institutions of ours, we were able to lure him here to Iowa. And being able to attract and keep world-class faculty like Frederick is critical to our short-term and long-term success. Make no mistake about it, we're in a very competitive peer set, which includes some of the best universities across the country here indicated on the map in the United States. But I can assure you we would not want it any other way, because this competition for the best and the brightest nationwide helps keep us sharp and helps us bring them here to Iowa for our students. This means that our citizens in this state have access to the best and brightest faculty, and today, for a fraction of the price it would cost them to go to any one of those peer institutions on the map. This competition for the best and brightest does, however, cost money, and as I've been saying since day one when I took this job, we are being rated for talent because we do not have enough resources to compete for the best and the brightest. When we compare the cost to attend the University of Iowa against our peers, which you'll see here in this slide, it's clear that we are underpriced. While that may seem positive for our students in the short run, it's damaging to our students in the long run and the state's investment. The value of the degree is based on the excellence of the University of Iowa, not just today, but over the long term. If we continue down this path of being the cheapest university in our peer group, then obtaining a world-class education will require Iowans, frankly, to go out of Iowa and pay non-resident tuition to institutions like Michigan, Texas, or Wisconsin. And I believe that would be a very bad mistake. While there's a lot of concern about the price of higher education, I'd like to provide some data that illustrates what's actually going on. This is a long time period chart you see before you. It illustrates the amount of money spent per student, and it's indexed for inflation over the years. And it's indexed of the education cost out of our general education fund. Since 1994, we've spent roughly $7,000 per student over the past two decades, while improving in the lower red line, the four-year graduation rate of students, which has increased by almost 20% over the same time period. What does it mean? It means that our costs have not escalated out of control, but who pays for them has changed. I'm the first to realize, with four students in my family, that parents and students have seen a dramatic increase in their tuition bills. However, this increase has not been driven by increasing costs at the University of Iowa. Rather, it's been driven by a dramatic reduction in state support, and the only way to make up for this and keep our world-class standards has been to increase our tuition. Net, as this chart indicates, we're doing more to ensure the success of our students, frankly, in an increasingly more efficient manner. These are the principles which we're now using to allocate the resources that we receive. I've shared these with you in the past, and it'll be the way in which we allocate the tuition increases we're asking for going forward. And I believe it's important that we just pause and once more understand what's going on. This is the way in which we think about how to distribute our resources, student success, improving our quality indicators as represented in the relevant rankings, our values, and a view of where we're headed in the future. More specifically, these are the items that we've just finished going through our budgeting process. These are the items that we'll use the additional resources for. As you can see, they follow our budgeting principles and an important down payment for the future success of our university. What is not included in this slide is the progress we've made on increasing compensation, in particular for our faculty, which we're now targeting to get to 0.95 or 95% of the median over the next several years. We asked the deans, and they delivered in this process, and they've developed a plan to prioritize within their existing budgets a timeline to deliver our faculty salaries to 95% of the peer groups. We have the talent and the desire to take our university to the rightful place it belongs in, which is a world-class institution. And we look with your support the ability to do so. We're going to compete for the best and brightest, and now I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions or comments? No, thank you, President Harrell.
My pleasure. Thank you.
President Rood.
You may have noticed at your chairs, I have put a copy of our 2015-2016 annual report. There are only a few of these. We'd only print a few of these because the majority of them are printed online electronically, and then we archive them so that the university can have them. So that's for your use. First, what did I do? Did I break it? There we go. I'm going to ask her to stand up. Gwen Berry's here. Gwen has been named our first Chief Diversity Officer at UNI. She's going to assume her new position. I kind of fibbed to her. I told her she'd start the 1st of July. She kind of really started the day she got I announced it. She's currently the Associate Director of Compliance and Equity Management at UNI, and she does have a bachelor's degree from Iowa State. but her master's degree is from UNI, so I know she's working with Reg and the folks at U of I and the folks at Iowa State to put together collective packages. So welcome, Gwen. Thanks for coming. We also were searching this year for a vice president for student affairs. That's such a critical position that we decided not to fill the position at this time, although the candidate pool is very, very strong. We felt that we didn't find the right fit at this time, so we're reopening that. We're aggressively putting a committee together. We're going to start the advertising this summer and have a vice president for student affairs in place by January 1st of next year. We received a gift that was a surprise to us in a way. We thought we were going to get a substantial gift, but it turned out to be way more than substantial. Ted Dorman passed away, and his estate was kind enough. He was kind enough through his estate for almost a $2.5 million gift that establishes the Theodore and Mary Dorman Presidential Scholarship Fund at UNI. Income for the fund will be used to provide scholarships to undergraduate and grad students in the Presidential Scholars Program. We're going to start that not this fall, but next fall. Ted had a doctorate from Harvard and served as a member of the UNI sociology faculty from 1949 until he retired in 1981. So we're very, very excited about that gift. Enrollment is going exactly in the direction we'd like it to. Right now, we're conservatively projecting 12,045. Interesting pieces of that. Returning students are up 300, which we're very, very pleased about. Freshmen, 1,972 freshmen have accepted admission, which is up 3.1%. And an interesting number for us, we continue to go in the direction of attracting more out-of-state students. The number in 1972 includes 164 non-resident students, which if it holds will turn out to be the largest number of new non-resident freshmen in the history of UNI. Transfers are down a little bit right now, but the optimistic part of that phrase, we hope to see lots of late action in the transfer students coming in. And, of course, housing reports are in up 6.2%. So we're very, very excited about that. Enrollment's moving in the right direction. And we look to see a great first-year class this fall. We're hosting our second annual Midwest International Piano Competition. In fact, as we speak, the competition features exceptional pianists from around the world, and it kind of redefines the categories of junior and senior. You're a senior pianist if you're over the age of 21. You're a junior pianist if you're under the age of 21. Last year, I think our youngest competitor was 13 or 14 years of age. We have about 30 folks from around the world, and they're absolutely out of sight. And it allows us to introduce, through the School of Music, the international community to not only the University of Northern Iowa, but the state of Iowa, so that they know that we have a lot of things to offer. So we're very excited about that. We also received a nearly $500,000 award from the Carver Charitable Trust to our Earth and Environmental Science Department for an environmental analysis classroom and lab. The department first began offering a bachelor's degree in 2013. We have 44 majors, and the intent of this lab will be to support the growing programs and the increasing needs of students in the area of environmental laboratory research. Senior cross-country track and field athlete Ben Fick was named a COSIDE All-Academic All-District First Team in May. These district teams are released to recognize top student athletes, and as you might expect, Ben has a connection to another university. His dad, Dan, is also a track athlete at UNI and is currently and has been a physician at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics for probably 30 years. Pardon me? I have to talk to him about that. So we're very, very excited about Ben's success and our continued success, both on and off the field at athletics. Through our foundation fundraising alumni efforts, we have dramatically increased our contact with our alums. I don't have to read you the numbers. You just see the numbers. Alumni events over the last 3 years have increased by 62%. More importantly, our attendance has increased 82%. One of the efforts is what we discover, I think all of us discover, is that we We let students graduate, and then we let them hang around for 20 years. And then as they become successful, we call them up and say, hey, I hear you're successful. And they look at us and say, where you been for the last 20 years? So we're trying very, very hard to contact all of our alums from the time they graduate throughout their careers, and I think these alumni events are evidence of that. Very exciting time for us. When I arrived, we were right after a $150 million comprehensive capital campaign, which we raised $158 million. We ended that campaign a year early, and we said we're going to raise $40 million for scholarships over the next 5 years. Well, we failed. We raised $41 million in 3 years and 5 months. The challenge now is when do you quit and call success and go on to the next one? But for a university that's a regional comprehensive university like you and I, striving to be a national comprehensive university, basically to raise $1 million a month for 41 months is phenomenal. And I can't thank the entire UNI family. I can't thank our division advancement. It puts us kind of on a level where now we got to perform. So now it's going to be the expectation, geez, Bill, you only raised $1 million last month. How come you're not raising more? But we're very, very excited about that. And these scholarships really go to help those students that are really in need and are really going to be successful. Generally, our giving is about 50%, 50-50. It's about 50% cash and about 50% in some kind of an estate gift or a deferred gift as it goes forward. And the hope, of course, is you have enough deferred gifts that you build that up so on an annual basis those deferred gifts come to fruition. We are also, those of you not from Cedar Falls probably don't know the significance of the Sturgis Falls Celebration. The Sturgis Falls Celebration in Cedar Falls happens every June. It's 2 weeks from now where the high school and the community celebrate. And this year we have recognized a plaza. We had a donor from California who provided significant dollars. And we have taken the lentil from the old laboratory school, and we built a quiet plaza in between where the old lab school was and the university for reflection, for classes, for the community, and that will be dedicated at Sturgis Falls this weekend to again celebrate the long success of the Malcolm Price Laboratory School at UNI. Finally, I guess it's my turn to say thank you. Say a couple words about, I've had long conversations with Bruce Harold, who grew up in Gallipolis, Ohio, which is about an hour from Marietta. So I've gotten all the secrets about Southeast Ohio. When I go there, I know what's going on. Marietta is going to be a wonderful opportunity. It is a small community of 20,000 on the Ohio River. I like to tell people it's the Grinnell on the Ohio River, on this, in the east side of the country. A little known fact that I've been telling people is the answer to the question is, did George Washington have a backup plan? And the answer is yes. The history of Marietta is it was one of the locations that George Washington had identified to be the capital of the new frontier just in case we lost the Revolutionary War. We won, so Marietta went on its own business. So that it's very steeped in history. The college was founded in 1835. Although I have very mixed emotions about leaving the state of Iowa, people I love, I'm very excited that we've been able to drive enrollment up. I'm very excited that we've been able to drive debt down. We have a great leadership team in place. So I know that I'm leaving the university in good hands. It's been my pleasure to work with Iowa State, University of Iowa. Mentorship, agreements, disagreements, a lot of fun, a lot of conversations. I've already engaged the three provosts in conversations about 3+2 programs, 4+1 programs. I'm pretty sure Marietta College has a lot of outstanding graduates that would love to come to Iowa to go to vet school, med school, dental school, law school, et cetera. So we've already started those conversations. I want to thank Bob. I want to thank the BOR staff. I want to thank the Board of Regents and the governor and the legislature for 3 great years. A lot of things have happened, and very excited about those things. I'm not going to sever any ties to Iowa. I'm gonna sneak back every now and then. Ben Jacobson's already got me tickets for the Xavier game when Northern Iowa plays in Cincinnati after Thanksgiving, so I'm committed to that. You come here and you love a place, you cut a little piece of your heart out and leave it here. My folks at the University of Northern Iowa know that I love to and will continue to refer to it as the University of Nothing Impossible. So thank you very much for this opportunity, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments? Regent McKibben.
Thank you, Mr. President. As an alum of the university, Mr. President, I certainly appreciate what you've done for the last 3 years and how you've brought the university. I had my CSBS advisory committee meeting there last Friday with Dean Bass and the rest of my colleagues. And to a person, they were so supportive of what you have done and how far you've brought the university over the last 3 years. So I can tell you as an alum and the many other alums that I sat with that day, we certainly appreciate that, and we wish you all of the best in your future endeavors. So thank you.
Thanks, Counselor. Appreciate it.
And, Bill, as I said last night, your leadership, your enthusiasm at a time when the university really needed that was really critical in bringing about a positive confidence level at the university and enrollment with the state, with the variety of the things we've been able to accomplish. So thank you. We wish you the best.
Thank you. It's been absolutely my pleasure.